This is the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders. Here's your host, JT the Brick.
Welcome to week 14 of the official Raiders podcast. I'm your host, JT. This is a big one. This is a really big one as we elevate the podcast because we're talking playoffs with the Silver and Black at 6-6, taking on the 6-6 Kansas City Chiefs this Sunday, December 10th. At Arrowhead Stadium. Howie Long will be our first guest. He'll join us in a few minutes, the Hall of Famer. And we'll talk about how both of these teams have gotten to this point in the season. The Silver and Black are riding a two-game winning streak. They've won the last three out of four. And the Kansas City Chiefs have lost four in a row coming into this game. You know, over the last couple of weeks, we talked about how could the Raiders get in this position. After their slow start in the beginning of the year, they've been digging out of a hole for about a month and a half. Credit to Jack Del Rio and his coaching staff and the players and the fans for getting the Raiders back in this spot. So the Raiders now control their own destiny. They have the ability to win the division and host a home playoff game in Oakland, but there is a lot of work to get to before that. Taking a look at what's been the Raider philosophy over the last couple of weeks, it's just been about taking care of business. I thought the Raiders caught two big breaks. They faced Paxton Lynch instead of Trevor Siemian when Denver came in. They faced Geno Smith instead of Eli Manning. And what did the Raiders do? They won both those games. They put those teams down so they could get ready to be in the hunt going into Kansas City. And in those games, what I've enjoyed is watching the Raiders and certain individual players elevate their game, take it to another level. And this is what Jack Del Rio told me exclusively when we were in Sarasota in Florida. Remember when he talked about getting the team's mojo back? The only way you're going to do that is by winning games, building successful stories, building in practice after a couple of victories. And quite frankly, that's what the Raiders have done to put themselves in this spot. And how about Marshawn Lynch? What happens to him when he gets back to Oakland and he plays in front of these home fans? Lynch had a monster game in a Raider win that they had to have against the Giants.
Raiders go into an eye Alawale ahead of Marshawn Lynch. First and 10. Right in the chin strap of the logo at midfield off the right side. Big hole! Lynch is gone! 30, 20, 10, 5! Beast mode! Touchdown! Raiders! 51 yards! What a block length from Gabe Jackson!
101 yards on 17 carries, and the beast mode is running violently. We're going to talk about that on this podcast. Look, his legs seem to be fresh. It took him a while, and it takes two or three guys to bring him to the ground. And again, I go back to Khalil Mack and the way he's playing. The strip sack, the fumble recovery, what he does on the defensive side as a complete player. Again, Howie Long, I'll ask him about that coming up here. And Bucky Brooks momentarily, who's really good at breaking down tape. But Mack's playing well. Irvin's playing well. Great to see Danico Autry and that defensive line just doing a little bit more under John Pagano's leadership so the back end, the safeties and the corners can make plays. The defense is playing well. Again, they took out the last two opponents and they're building success stories, and that's what we need heading into this game against Kansas City. Taking a look at Kansas City, I've said this on my radio shows. The lug nuts are starting to come off. The wheel hasn't come off yet because they're still in control of their destiny. But losing four games in a row, and they're questioning their quarterback in Alex Smith, their head coach in Andy Reid. This is a big game for Kansas City as much as Oakland for them to get back on track. Coming into this game, Kansas City ranks sixth overall in total offense, ninth in their passing offense. Alex Smith still has big numbers up there. But Kansas City on defense, without certain players, they're starting to crumble on the back end. They're ranked 30th in total defense, 30th in rush defense. So the Raiders have an opportunity to match up well and play big and hopefully decide on how they're going to score points. Are they going to do it on the ground with Marshawn Lynch, or is Derek Carr, who is getting his mojo back and feeling well, is Carr going to have a big game in the air? Look, Derek knows this Kansas City rival has haunted him in the past, but winning that game earlier this year on Thursday Night Football got that gorilla off of his back in a primetime game, and now hopefully Derek could have another big game. Quickly, the Raider Nation's got to be excited about this. Coming off a 12-win season last year, expectations were high this year. We've talked about the schedule being more difficult. I don't know where you saw the Raiders at this point, 8-4 maybe, but they're 6-6. and they're tied for first place. And the focus is there in Alameda for this team to do something special down the stretch. And the Chargers are there, the Chiefs are there, the Raiders are there, whoever gets hot at the right time. And the Raiders have the toughest schedule out of all the teams left in the AFC West, so they're going to have to play precision football. They're going to have to play outstanding football, and they're going to have to take care of business on the road. Our first guest on the official Raiders podcast is one of the great Hall of Famers, the great Raider legends of all time. Howie Long from the NFL on Fox joins us. Howie, first off, thanks again for joining us on the podcast again this year as the 6-6 Raiders take on the 6-6 Kansas City Chiefs in a game that means everything for both teams.
Well, we thought this is what it would come down to. We just didn't think it would be 6-6. I think the league does a great job of putting an emphasis on divisional games. The NFC South has a boatload of them coming up, and the AFC West, obviously. And it's wide open now. It looked like Kansas City was just going to pull away with this thing early on. And San Diego had a really bad start, a lot of bad luck, particularly with the kicking game. And the year's been kind of all over the place for us. And I think the positives that I've seen over the last couple of weeks is, one, I think we're in a better place defensively. I think we're more buttoned down. I think we're being more aggressive. You look at 11 sacks through week 11 and then 8 in the last 2 weeks. guys up front are being more aggressive. I think the kind of recommitment to the run game. And, you know, Marshawn took a lot of time off. And, you know, you never know how that's going to work out. And, you know, he looked like Marshawn last week. And they have a strong commitment to the run game. And younger guys out wide with the suspension and injuries at the wide receiver position, Holton, Warford, Cordell Patterson, you know, I watch him in Minnesota. Just find a way to get him the ball.
Yeah.
He's dynamic. Roberts coming back in, you know, making big plays. But I think, once again, the commitment to the run game, it helps your offensive line. It helps your play-action pass game. It helps your defense. It helps time of possession. And I think versus the Kansas City team that's kind of right there on the wall, they're a wounded animal, and it's they're going to give you their best shot at home.
Howie, let's stay with Marshawn. You bring up a good point with the time off. What is that like in regards to him getting his legs back but being an aging back? Because he is running violently now, and it's taken two or three guys to bring him to the ground. He had the 50-yard-plus touchdown run, and it just seems like when he's in Oakland playing there, he just comes out of the tunnel and he's completely locked in. But the more touches he gets, the less touches for DeAndre Washington and Jalen Richard. So do you like the chemistry about Carr getting Lynch going and downing in this running game? Because that could be a big strength on the road at Kansas City.
Well, it has to be. And I think whatever it is that, you know, whether it's how you're sleeping, what you're eating the night before the game, the morning of the game, whatever it is he's doing down in Oakland, he needs to duplicate on the road in Kansas City. And, you know, there's enough for everyone in the backfield. But the commitment to the run game and the mindset of your offensive line is key. And I know they've had some issues in Kansas City this year, and you need to take full advantage of it. And defensively, you know, it's interesting. I was watching the game last week, and they talk about Khalil Mack. And he came into the game with, I think, 6.5 sacks. And they're saying, well, people are saying he's having an off year. What people don't get, everyone just looks at a number. And it's really, to me, it's an unfortunate reality of where we are, because everything is numbers driven. It's a lazy way to look at football. A better way to look at football is actually watch the film. And when you watch the film, tell me another guy at that position who does what he does down in and down out first down, second down, third down, short yardage, goal line, it doesn't matter. He's a dominant player, and he's a disruptive player, and people have to account for him. What he needs is he needs other people to step up. And I think you're bringing more five-man pressure. You're starting to be more aggressive. I think the coverage is more buttoned up. I'm a big Pagano fan. I liked his defenses in San Diego, and I think it's an unfortunate move. You don't like to see anyone get fired, and that's unfortunate. But like with any business, whether it's, you know, Google or the Oakland/Las Vegas Raiders, your bottom line dictates how long you're there. And I think John is a guy who's seen a lot of football. He knows a lot of football. He's a detail guy, and I think that's what we need.
Howie Long's our guest. You know, I ask a lot of Raider legends this question when they join me on this of these platforms. Tim Brown about Amari Cooper, and Tim said, honestly, you know, Amari hasn't reached out to me. I've talked to him a bit. You can just tell that relationship is beginning to build. Charles Woodson, Mike Haynes, all of these guys, how do they step in and talk to a young corner or a safety? I'm thinking about you and Mac, and you got that in on Fox last week and on the broadcast there on the post game. What is the relationship like with you and Mac, considering he is on a path to be one of the all-time greats if he can stay on this dominant path?
You know, he's a guy that, you know, it's funny. So certain guys you just don't have to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that you know exactly what you're going to get every week. He's like the sun. He just shows up. And Khalil is going to be Khalil. Do I reach out to him and congratulate him when he wins Defensive Player of the Year? Yes. When he gets five sacks? Yes. You know, I'm available if he ever needed me. Or if I thought there was a dip in his play. But I don't see that. You know, and I would feel compelled to reach out and ask, are you dinged? Are you banged up? Is there something wrong? You know, a lot of times it's kind of Khalil, and he's carrying everything. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Bruce Irvin. I think Bruce Irvin is a real talent, and he needs to be a presence, particularly on third down and in the blitz package. I think he's a guy that can bring pressure. And, you know, the interior guys, some are young, and it takes time to figure it out. The game slows down. You start to anticipate snap counts and get into a rhythm. How you run stunts, it's, you know, it's the details. It's every single step is important. And I think you're starting to see some of that over the last couple of weeks.
Hall of Famer Howie Long is our guest. Howie, where do you stand with Carr? I've been telling Raider fans, the guy got hurt last year. He worked his butt off to even try to come back last year if the Raiders were going to make a Super Bowl run. He gets hurt this year. He comes back much earlier than people expected, but it just doesn't seem like it's clicking. There's injuries to receivers. There's drops again, but he talked about it this week. All of his goals and the team goals are right in front of him. Do you believe that he can just flip that switch and start dominating in these final four games?
Well, I like what I've seen as of late. He seems to have an, I don't know if you're seeing the same thing, but there seems to be an energy. And I think the group feeds off of that. But there are a couple of things. One, the drops are unacceptable. You know, everyone's going to drop a football periodically. But if you're not chasing perfect on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, forget about Sunday. You got to chase perfect Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. You got to chase perfect on Monday when you're watching film. You've got the new game plan. You have to put in so much time beyond the time that you put in your meetings, you know, with the team, with your time on the field, with your coaches. There's so much prep. There aren't enough hours in the week because you're chasing something that's unattainable. Individually and collectively, you're chasing perfect. When you stop doing that, when you accept dropping a ball at practice, I'm dropping a ball at practice, I'm pissed. If I'm getting blocked in practice, if I get hooked, I get cut off, I'm pissed. If I get trapped, I'm pissed. I don't ever want to get blocked. I'm going to get blocked. But if you're not chasing perfect, it's the holy grail. I tell my kids, you just got to chase it. It's unattainable, but when you stop chasing it, it's when you start going backwards.
Wrapping it up with Howie Long. Howie, I've asked the legends before you, Freddie Biletnikoff, Willie Brown, Banaszak. What did that Kansas City rivalry mean? And you hear Bobby Bell and Len Dawson and those players and how vicious it was in the AFL days. What did the Kansas City rivalry mean to you compared to San Diego and obviously Denver? What was specific about this one for you?
Well, I think when we were there, every week that we went on the road, it was Raider Week. Whether it's in Kansas City, they'll have the red jackets, and I think you know what I mean. they've got their red jacket, their version of, Kansas City Chiefs Hall of Fame guys, and they line the field and they run through them. They've got the guy banging the drum. It's a bigger deal for them than it was for us. Now, over a period of time, that's become less significant on our end, but it's starting to come back now. And I think you have to go into that environment. We were in one game up there. There must have been 20 fights on the field at the same time. Greg Townsend started it, not me, just for the record. And Brad Buddy was involved, and it was a melee. And I remember one year we went up there, and Bo was with us, and Bo carried, after his first carry, about 250 baseballs flew on the field. So, there's a lot of history to the rivalry. And, are the Raiders depicted as being the evil villain in it? Yeah, but trust me, Kansas City players over the years haven't been angels either.
Howie, I want to wrap it up with a media question or two for you in regards to how everybody's handling relocation, because you were out here for the groundbreaking. I was there with my wife, and I think you're handling it as good as anyone, because it is uncomfortable to many. I've said this year on radio and the podcast that this is not the year to poke the grizzly bear. The Raider fans from the Black Hole, the diehard fans in Oakland, they are going through a really difficult time. And a lot of guys aren't handling it well with radio shows, TV shows, and blogs, and everybody's just getting mixed up in it. How are you handling it when you talk to the fans and then you go on the NFL on Fox and you have to kind of either talk about it or not? It's very complicated for a lot of people, especially former players. Where do you stand?
It is complicated, and it's disappointing. And I get where the passionate fans of Oakland, it's where I started. And it's kind of the foundation of the organization, and an organization that was founded in 1960 and, synonymous with the city of Oakland. And I can tell you this, and fans need to know this. There's not a player that's played there that wouldn't like to see the team in Oakland. And I know that for Mark, both Mark Davis and Mark Bedain, point of emphasis 1, 2, and 3 was to get that done. It was impossible to get done. That was the problem. There's no money there. There's no funding. And if you're going to be angry at someone, be angry at the people who kind of made the decision not to move forward with it. The NFL wanted them there. The Raiders, Mark Davis wanted them there. The players who have played there wanted them there. But if you're going to be competitive in today's NFL, you need a state-of-the-art facility. And in order to be competitive for free agency and all of those things, you have to put a product out there that people will come and pack the stadium, and, the non-shared revenue, and not to get too detailed, but, Vegas is Raider fans from both Southern California and Northern California have always traveled well. When we were down in L.A., the fans from Oakland traveled down there. When we were up in Oakland, there are people from L.A. that travel up there every week. Now, the people from L.A. will travel to Vegas by car 3-4 hours. I don't know what the exact drive time is. And hopefully there'll be a group from Oakland. And I know Mark has made that a point of emphasis to give them the first opportunity to buy tickets. in the same area and be a part of it.
Last one. When I see you on Sundays, it's the best pregame show in the history of football. And is it fair to assume that this Sunday, with 2 weeks ago, Crabtree, Aqib Talib, the Gronkowski suspension, and Howie, your comments on that brutally violent Monday night football game between Pittsburgh and Cincinnati and the suspensions coming out of that, as a former player, a Hall of Famer, and a big-time member of the media, where do you stand on the way the game looks on the field after what we saw the last couple of weeks with all these suspensions?
Well, the Gronk thing was unacceptable, and I'm sure Gronk would be the first one to tell you that. You can't get to the point where you're that frustrated to where you take that bad of a cheap shot. And, you know, that's an anomaly for him. I mean, you go through his history, that's not who he is. He's a, you know, he's a dominant player, and he's been a dominant player. He's a fun-loving guy. He's a competitive guy. And it was an anomaly. Now, it's also an anomaly for that team. And I'm a big believer in this. The team is a reflection of the head coach. The team is a reflection of the coordinator and the position coaches. What you see on the field is a byproduct of that. And, you know, you're going to have your outliers where you kind of make an exception on a guy or two on a football team who are always going to be right on the edge. But they have to kind of fall in line with the philosophy of the team, the coach, the coordinator, the position coach. that AFC North division, that's as close as we've got to kind of back in the 80s right now. But we're at a time when it's really unacceptable, and I think people are more aware because it's bigger, stronger, faster. The last thing you want to see is someone lying motionless on the field. You know, the Cooper hit was a big hit. did I see it again and again? No, I didn't. But it was a scary hit, and for him to be lying on the field, you know, from what I gather, knocked out, is pretty scary. Now, the Bengal hit in the end zone, that's a bang-bang play. I don't know. He'll get fined for that. I think they pulled the suspension on that. The Juju Schuster thing, in the not-so-distant past, it was a hit that was kind of part of the league, but it no longer is. You can't just line somebody up on a blindside hit and knock them out. And then, to add injury to insult, or insult to injury, whichever way you want to go with it, the part that really bothered me was, and I would tell him this, is that the taunting, the standing over a player who's injured on the field and taunting him, it's unacceptable. There's no place for it in our sport.
Howie, thanks for the time. You've always been great to me. One favor, when I give your son Howie a rematch in ping pong in Napa, I need you there. He's an incredible guy. He's a great friend, but I think if you're there standing next to the table in Napa, he will probably take me down, and I can live with that.
Well, we had a lot of ping pong games in our garage, and a lot of melees broke out in that garage over ping pong games. Hopefully, no fights break out.
Great to talk to you. I'll see you on the sidelines in Oakland soon. Thank you, Howie.
Good talking to you, partner.
So we really appreciate the great Howie Long joining us. And now I go to one of the best analysts in all of football from NFL Network. He's a former player and scout. Bucky Brooks joins us. Bucky, good to talk to you again as the Raiders go into Kansas City. Both teams 6-6, but Kansas City's lost 4 in a row. Let's handicap and talk about this contest.
Oh, man, it's a crazy game. Two teams hitting in opposite directions. Kansas City Chiefs are struggling. The Raiders are seemingly beginning to find their stride offensively and defensively with some of the changes that they made.
I look at Kansas City and Andy Reid and Alex Smith, and Alex Smith still rated a very high level at the quarterback position. What do you think has failed Kansas City in the last month? Have they gotten away from anything that was part of their game plan early?
I think a couple of different things are happening. A lot of the attention was on Alex Smith, and last week, you know, there was an outcry that he needed to be benched, but I think it's impossible to bench a quarterback that has a passer rating of 107 that has done some of the things that he's done statistically. coming into this game. I think the biggest issue has been defenses have caught up to what the Kansas City Chiefs want to do. They want to throw the ball down the field to Tyreek Hill. They want to feed Travis Kelce over the middle. So what teams have been doing, they're playing some form of cover two against Kansas City, daring them to run the ball successfully against what we call light boxes. They haven't been able to get a tremendous amount of production from Kareem Hunt as a runner since opening the season with really a big flurry the first four games. It's kind of been a non-factor when it comes to the ground game. So on offense, they can't run the ball. They can't dictate the turns. They can't push it down the field. They seemingly solved some of those issues last week with Matt Nagy taking over as the play caller. They did some things schematically that allowed them to get more friendly coverage looks, and they were able to explore. We saw Tyreek Hill have a big game. We saw Travis Kelce also have a big game. Their biggest issue has been their defense. They're not getting stops. They're not stopping the run. They're not necessarily putting themselves in a position where they can get after the passer. And then in the back end, they have struggled. They haven't held up in coverage, and people have been taking advantage of them by hitting them over the top. Without a suspended Marcus Peters this week, it's going to be tough for them to kind of contain what should be a very explosive Raiders offense with Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree coming back to the fold.
Bucky, I look at the Raiders defense. It's improved. The rush defense is ranked 11th. Their red zone defense is 9th. And John Pagano is now in at that position as defensive coordinator with Jack Del Rio, obviously, overseeing that. Have you seen an improvement with the Raiders up front? Mac's one thing, but Irvin's getting going. Autry's getting going. It just seems like a little bit of a bigger and faster pass rush and stopping the run is helping the Raiders on the back end.
Well, I mean, obviously, when you have a change, you change the coordinator, everyone in the building's ears perk up because, you know, the next, you kind of fall on the sword, the next people to fall on the sword are going to be the players. And so, obviously, they got their attention when they removed Ken Norton from his position as the coordinator. John Pagano has always done a good job of putting together solid defenses. Back in his San Diego days, he always had the team competing, does a great job with the X's and O's. And he is going to find a way to put them in a position to make plays. Ultimately, it's on the players to make those plays, but he is one of the best in the business in terms of creating one-on-one matchups for his guys. What the Raiders have to get, though, is they have to find a way to generate turnovers. It's so hard to get stops and conventional stops in this league, three and outs and the like. You have to be able to take the ball away. It's the biggest deciding factor in pro football. Whoever wins the turnover battle typically wins. The Raiders' issues early in the year, they have not been able to take the ball away. And until they're able to take the ball away and create other opportunities for their offense, they're always going to be a little bit behind the eight ball.
Bucky, I look at Derek Carr, and I'm seeing improvement. But again, you go up against the Giants and Denver, and obviously Denver comes in testing out a new quarterback in Paxton Lynch. We talked at length about Geno and Eli and what happened last week. Derek Carr is trying to build confidence. He's coming off another injury this year to his back after the devastating injury last year. What have you seen on film in the last 3 weeks with Carr that would lead the Raider Nation to believe that he's ready to peak in these final four games of the season where they need him to play great heading into the playoffs?
Well, I'll be honest. He's been a little rusty dealing with the injuries and like hasn't necessarily been on his game. I think the biggest issue for the Raiders has been the play caller. Ty Downing is learning on the job his first year as the OC, first year really as a primary play caller. Everyone is adjusting. When I look at the Raiders, they're pretty static on offense in terms of how they go about their business. They don't really use a lot of motion. They don't use a lot of shift. And they really don't move their guys around a lot. When you have guys like Michael Crabtree and Amari Cooper, guys who are really, really talented in terms of skill players but may not be the most explosive, you have to try and find a way to kind of script some things to allow them to beat press coverage, to beat tight coverage, so they can do the thing that they want to do when they have the ball in their hand. And so a lot of it is the maturation of the OC, Ty Downing, kind of coming into his own as a play caller, because once he kind of figures out it's players, not plays, you'll continue to see the Raiders get better. We've seen some of that the last couple weeks. But we need to see more of it if they're going to be the team that we thought they were going to be heading into the year.
Bucky, let's stay on that for a second, because young offensive coordinators at times look over their shoulder, because if there's a drop-off, they're worried about their jobs. And clearly, Downing works well with Carr. That's the reason Musgrave was out. Downing comes in and is elevated. So what should we expect to see from Todd Downing the rest of the way? I always say, if the offense is open, keep it open. More explosive plays downfield, but then again, guys got to get open. You set up the run to set up the pass. When you look at what the Raiders can do with Carr and Marshawn Lynch running violently now, what do you think? Do you think this team should be pass heavy or stay with the run against an opponent like Kansas City?
I think they always should be run heavy. I think when you look at the way their personnel is constructed on that side, big, beefy offensive line that is at their best going forward. Big running back, Marshawn Lynch, who is kind of a workhorse, who needs 20 or so carries to really make an impact on the game. Derek Carr and Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree can make plays in the passing game, certainly, but it's a lot easier in the National Football League. If you can run it, dictate the terms, go against some single high safety looks, one-on-one on the outside, and allow your guys to work against teams that aren't necessarily geared to play coverage, that is ideally how the Raiders need to play. I think a lot of it over the next few weeks will be Ty Downing committed to running the football. If you're patient enough to live through some of the negative plays that may come with that, to get to the other side where you can see Marshawn Lynch imposing his will and the defense changing how they have to play because they really got to respect number 24.
This is outstanding analysis on what the Raiders might do or what they should do as we're wrapping it up with Bucky Brooks from NFL Network. On that point, there has been confusion in the Raider Nation, the fans, on why sometimes a zone blocking technique when you have KO and Hudson and Penn who are road graders and can go better and stronger one-on-one. What about the technique with Mike Tice and what this offensive line philosophy should be?
You know, I mean, not necessarily privileged to how they want to play, but I will say this. Ultimately, all coaches have to make determinations based on their personnel. And when you look at the Raiders' personnel, they should be road graders, guys that can mash them all at the point of attack. Even though you occasionally have some plays that are zone plays to go with your pin and pull plays and some of your traditional powers and stuff, ideally you want to kind of skew the play calling towards what your players do well. And so I think it's a learning curve for everybody. You have a new OC, 8, 9, 10, 11 games in. He's still beginning to kind of figure it out, starting to settle in. So now as you're making what we call the dash for the cash, the four-game run to the tournament, you got to make sure that you're clicking on all cylinders. So the time is now right now for the Raiders to find their identity on offense and defense and find a way to play to that at all times.
Last question, the most important one. For years, I've been on the sidelines against Kansas City and seen this up close, and I've never seen a team run misdirection against the Raiders like this. They do it every game. No matter what the game plan is, they're going to start a play to the right, someone's going to leak out to the left, and there's going to be a big play. It's been happening for 20 years. What does Jack Del Rio and this defensive staff need to do, knowing that it's worked for Kansas City, that game plan of misdirection that the Raiders have struggled at in this rivalry?
Part of their belief in doing the misdirection and the things that the Chiefs have been doing is because they're really running a hyper-speed college offense with Alex Smith. He ran an offense very similar to that at Utah. He was a guy that gained 700 yards as a runner at Utah. He's very comfortable in that college zone read spread system with a lot of RPOs. The reason they give you so much eye candy and misdirection is because it masks their intention. They may be running a small menu of plays, but because there's so many different motions and shifts and fly sweep motions, jet sweeps, and they work in the perimeter, but also work in the inside, they give your guys a lot to think about, a lot to look at. And if they're not disciplined and if they're not trusting the process that the coach has laid out in terms of his defensive plan, yeah, they're going to have a tough time dealing with misdirection because it is intoxicating when you see all those guys going a million different ways.
Bucky, your analysis is outstanding. It's great to see you on all these different platforms. Thanks for joining us on the Official Raiders podcast. Hope to talk to you again real soon.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
As I've said, Bucky Brooks is fantastic. He's an analyst who's getting a lot of coverage all over several different platforms. We appreciate the fact that he joined us this week. Now we move to a former quarterback in this rivalry, a two-time Pro Bowler, a Super Bowl champion, and now with the NFL on CBS, we welcome Trent Green to the Official Raiders podcast. Trent, thanks for coming on, and let me jump right in. Kansas City has lost four in a row. You know this team, this coaching staff. What's been the main reason behind this slump?
Well, I think there've been several reasons. And any time it happens, I know immediately everybody wants to jump to the quarterback. And there was a lot of criticism being thrown around about Alex Smith, and he wasn't playing at the same level he was the first five games when he was clearly the front runner in the MVP race with the way they started and the success he was having. He did struggle for a couple weeks, but you can't blame it on him now after the performance he had last week against the Jets. It didn't get the job done to get the win, but he was highly productive and started throwing the ball back down the field again like he was doing earlier in the season. I think when you look at the running game has slumped off in recent weeks. Kareem Hunt started off the season looking like the defensive rookie of the year. It just hasn't been the same. And I give a lot of that blame to the offensive line. I just don't think they've been blocking as well. A couple weeks ago we had the game in Buffalo where I want to say he had 11 carries, and probably six of those 11 carries he was hitting the backfield. So there's just been too much penetration along the offensive line. And then from a wide receiver standpoint, you know, they got rid of Macklin at the beginning of the year. They made that decision. And then Chris Conley was supposed to be the guy to step in there, and he got injured. So now you've got a guy in Tyreek Hill. Yes, he's dynamic and the fastest guy in the league, but he's just converted to a wide receiver. And so he's still learning the position and trying to balance out the rest of that receiving core. Has been difficult. So there's struggles on the offensive side, and then defensively with Eric Berry getting injured at the beginning of the year. They've lost that leadership on the back end. They've had to shuffle some things around from a safety standpoint. Marcus Peters hasn't played nearly as well as he has in previous years. They've struggled at linebacker. They've struggled getting pressure on the quarterback. I mean, those are always trademarks of a Bob Sutton-type defenses, is getting sacks and getting turnovers. And they haven't had those this year.
You mentioned Hunt and Hill, and what's interesting to me and for the Raiders is they try to match up defensively in this game. When you have dynamic players who are speed guys who can get downfield, get over the top, when you get away from them for a week or two or the team starts getting a little bit more conservative, you know this from being a broadcaster now, the fans are screaming in Kansas City, get the ball to those guys in space again. But as a quarterback, former quarterback, how difficult is that when you know the defensive coordinator and the defense is game planning to take away at least one great player on that offense?
Well, and that's the key. You know, when you talk to the other teams, it's, you know, how do you stop the Chiefs? Well, do you give up the yards to Tyreek Hill or do you give up the yards to Travis Kelce? Well, you know, 9 times out of 10 or 10 times out of 10, they're going to say, well, we'll let the tight end have the catch. We'll let him get his 7 to 10 catches for 80 to 110 yards. It's better than putting it in the hands of this guy who at any point in time from anywhere on the field can score a touchdown because of the speed he has. So I think what teams have started to do is they've tried, or that's the goal, is to shut down the big playability of Tyreek Hill. He did have the two big touchdowns last week against the Jets. It ultimately didn't cost them because they got the win. But most teams have been trying to shut him down and then making the Chiefs have to formulate and work their way down the field, convert third downs, convert the short down and distances, get into the red zone and be productive. And that's really where they've struggled, is their red zone production. It was evident again last week against the Jets. So I think that's really been the game plan, is, hey, let's shut down the big play capability of Tyreek Hill and make them earn their drives as opposed to giving up big plays.
Trent Green is an analyst now for the NFL on CBS. He'll be on the call Sunday when the Jets take on the Broncos. You can also catch him Mondays throughout the season on NFL Monday Quarterback on CBS Sports Network. When we think about Andy Reid, he gave up play calling here a little while ago. I would think he'd want it back, and we know how great he is off the bye week and all the success he had with Donovan McNabb in Philadelphia. Give me a big picture, Trent, of who Andy Reid is, and obviously now on a slumping team that's lost 4 in a row, what is his core that he should get back to in a game against a rivalry team like the Raiders?
Well, I think for him, that's a big step for him, giving up play calling. I've had that conversation with him many times over the years, and he loves that aspect of it. And if you talk to a number of head coaches that are first-time head coaches, they don't want to give it up because that's what's gotten them to that point in their career, is that they like the X's and O's part of it. They like that part of it. The problem is the demands of being a head coach. It usually takes you away, or I don't want to say distractions, but it's time-consuming, all the other stuff you have to do other than just game planning. So I know that was a difficult decision for Andy. I don't know if he completely gave it up 100%. I thought there was more production by the offense last week with Matt Nagy calling things. Once again, I don't know if they'll ever divulge how much of it he actually gave up, if it was 100% of it or just a portion of it. But I do know that was difficult. And I think ultimately, just based on the conversations I've had with him through the years, to the second part of your question, I think what he wants to do is he wants to get aggressive with those offensive linemen. I know he's talked in the past about if the if the run game is not going, it usually has to do with the guys up front and setting an attitude and a tone of what he expects of those guys up front. So I would think moving forward, they need to get that attitude along the line, get that run game established, and then that's when, if you go back to the first month of the season when things were flying for the Chiefs, the running game was working, so then you were getting the play action pass, you were getting the one-on-ones at the outside, teams weren't able to just roll coverage or play too deep or do whatever they wanted to take away the big plays. They had to put that extra guy in the box to stop the run. So I would guess moving forward, that's what they're going to try and do. It's one thing to say it. It's another thing to do it. So they've only got four more left to try and get it done.
Trent Green joins us. Trent, I wanted to talk to you because from a Raiders perspective here, Marshawn Lynch is now running violently. It's taken two, three guys to bring him down. He's coming off a 100-plus yard game and a big 50-yard-plus touchdown. But I'm still waiting for Derek Carr to have that explosive game. And for Carr, he came back early from an injury. He played at an MVP level last year before he got injured. The Raiders are second in the NFL with their red zone offense when it comes to TD percentage. But their total offense is 16th. Their pass offense is 15th. You know their receivers have been dropping balls. Cooper's been in concussion protocol. Crabtree was suspended. He's coming off suspension. What are your expectations for Derek Carr the rest of the way?
Well, this could be the exact medicine that Derek Carr needs. If you go back to the first matchup of these two teams when the Raiders beat him 31-30, Derek Carr had over 400 yards passing and was firing the ball all over the place. And it goes back to the Chiefs not being able to put pressure on the quarterback. So I think the fact that they're getting Crabtree back, whether or not Cooper is going to be able to play, it is going to be a tough task for Kansas City. It was announced by Andy Reid yesterday that Marcus Peters is not going to play, so that takes away their best defensive corner. They've struggled when it comes to the other side of the field, who's going to be the rotation there. They've rotated guys in Mitchell. They've rotated in Acker. There's a number of non-household names, and they did go out and get Darrell Revis, so we'll see what Revis has left in the tank. He only played half the game last week against the Jets, so he's going to have to carry a lot more of the load this week without Peters in there. So I think there is an opportunity for the Raiders offense to get going this week, and it's at the expense of what the Chiefs are doing defensively. So I think if they get off to a fast start, it's going to quiet things down in Arrowhead, and it could be a productive day for them.
All right, you were with the Chiefs from 01 to 06. You're a great broadcaster now. I love your work on CBS. I want you to be real honest with me on the rivalry. It's Raider week in Kansas City. The Raiders really don't have that on the radio with Denver and the Chargers. I know how Kansas City gets worked up for this game, especially at Arrowhead. Give me an Al Davis story. I always want an Al Davis story because that ties in to the history of the Raiders and what this rivalry meant to you personally.
You know, unfortunately, in my career, I bounced around a little bit. I was an eighth-round pick, had to kind of find my way, and I eventually became a starter and got some stability. So when I got to the Chiefs, not knowing, early in my career, I was drafted by the Chargers. So I knew a little bit about the AFC West, but I didn't quite know the history of the Chiefs and Raiders rivalry, and it's pretty intense. Marty Schottenheimer kind of coined the term Raider Week. The rivalry was much longer than that, but Marty always had a special place in his heart for Raider Week. So by the time I got there with Coach Vermeil and the guys, it was very well in place. The history was long running. You even go back to Lamar Hunt and Al Davis. So it means a lot. It's one of those great rivalries in the National Football League, dating back to the AFL days. So it always carries more weight. Guys talk about it more. The town cares about it more. The fans are. Tend to be a little bit more passionate when it comes to this rivalry. Probably the best Al Davis story I can come up with, and it's one I've shared a few times. My wife and kids were running late to a game one time, and they went to get on the elevator to go up to whatever area they were sitting in, and the lady running the elevator said, "I have to go down before I go up because there's someone I have to pick up." Well, the elevator goes down, and of course it's Al Davis and his entourage coming off the field to go up to the owner's area. And they initially hold back and they look at my wife and my kids at the time were little. My daughter wasn't born yet, so my boys must have been in the single digits, I would guess, at that point in time, maybe 8 and 6 or 9 and 7. So he walks on and he kind of gives her a look and he looks over at the elevator operator and says, well, it's okay. She can stay on. And my wife, not knowing who Mr. Davis was at the time, because she was running frantic with two kids trying to get to the seats before kickoff happened, she looked at him wearing, you know, of course, his white sweatsuit and black and obviously in all Raiders gear. And she says, well, it's okay. I'll let you stay on the elevator, too. And the doors close, and the elevator operator, as it's going up, is saying, Mr. Davis, it's such an honor to have you on my elevator. It's, you know, it's an honor to me. Well, at this point in time, my wife realizes who it is she just said this to. And she kind of laughs, and she says, well, Mr. Davis, I apologize for what I said. I just want you to know I'm Trent Green's wife, and these are his boys here. And he kind of laughed, and so they ended up having a good laugh about it before the kickoff of the game. He had whatever nice comments he had to say to my wife about me or whatever. So I love telling that story because yeah. That's just my wife kind of getting caught up in the moment of her kids and trying to get there in time for kickoff.
That's a great story. Your wife talking to at the time and a legend in the league, a Maverick, a Hall of Famer. That's a great story that she'll share for a long time. Trent, really right. Appreciate you doing this, especially coming into this game. I know you're preparing for your other game. I love the work you do. Thanks for the time. We look forward to catching up with you again.
All right. Great talking with you. Take care.
Fun catching up with Trent Green, who's doing a really nice job as an analyst for the NFL on CBS. We're able to go up to Alameda to Raiders practice on the official Raiders podcast as they just got done with a weight training session. Donald Penn joins us on the official Raiders podcast. And Donald, I want to begin with last week against the Giants. Something interesting. A few people told me that when you left that game with the injury and came back, when you returned, you played some of your best football of the year. Walk me through what happened and when you came back, how you had that laser beam focus to get in there and play some of your best football.
Man, it was just my leg got caught kind of bad. I felt a little jet. Started pain in my back. Started getting back spasms. Once they wore off, you know, I came back in. And I haven't been having the year that I've been wanting to have that I'm known for. So I've just been trying to, you know, work extra hard and been putting in extra work, man, because you know, missing the holdout and coming back and stuff like that. I haven't been the dominant I wanted. I've showed signs of it, but I haven't been the consistent player that everybody knows I am. And, you know, these past couple of games, I've been feeling like I'm getting back into my own and getting back to myself. And like you said, I guess, you know, that flow and, you know, dealing with pain makes you focus a little more, makes you, you know, dig in a little deeper. So, you know, I'm just trying to help this team win. And I know some of my play earlier in the year wasn't helping them win. And, you know, lately I have been doing that. So I'm just trying to keep it up, really, so we can win.
I like that you're saying that because of the holdout. And obviously you set a goal for yourself and a higher standard. And you've been known to be critical of yourself. I mean, do you sense that you beat yourself up a little bit too much from time to time, but that also helps you refocus and go out and play better?
I know I beat myself up all the time. That's what makes me such a great player, and that's what's got me through this league, coming in as an undrafted free agent, you know, playing 12 years, you know, not missing a start. You know, me being so hard on myself is what drives me and makes me the player I am. And, you know, I think that's one of the things. That's why I've been just plugging away at it, you know, all year, because, you know, I've been showing signs, but I haven't been that guy that I know I am. And, you know, it's starting to come along. You know, it's starting to come along. And the good thing is, you know, we're still in the hunt, and it's starting to come along at the right time.
Donald Penn's our guest. Obviously, on the Florida trip, after the loss to Buffalo, there was an added sense of urgency as a leader on this team. What did you sense at that point in time to get this winning streak going and get back into this hunt? It seems like the whole team, from the coaching staff to all your teammates, are all on the same page, peaking at the right time.
Yeah, and the thing is, when we got after that Buffalo game, we didn't want to jump ahead. We wanted to make sure we focused on Miami. You know, it took them 1 week at a time. You know, one thing about that Buffalo game, we don't want to jump ahead to the season, you know, because that's what when you get caught up and you lose a close game because you get caught up looking forward to other stuff. So we just wanted to make sure we take it week by week. But we did, you know, come with such an urgency, like, hey, you know, things need to be a little tighter. We need to fine-tune things. We need to, you know, take our walkthroughs a little bit more serious, take our practices a little bit more serious, you know, start doing a little bit more studying on our own and stuff like that. And just starting putting a little extra because the stuff we were doing wasn't working, we weren't winning. So, you know, we just started trying to do a little extra thing to and the leaders started, you know, asking the other guys to do it. And, you know, I think they saw us doing it. And it's easy to lead when you see your leaders doing it.
You know, I know you're not, I'm not going to ask you for the game plan, obviously, for Kansas City, but I've been a little confused this year with the philosophy of zone blocking or just man-to-man mauling one-on-one with Mike Tyson, the coaching staff. What are you most comfortable with? What is the strength of this offensive line going into the final quarter of the season when it comes to run blocking technique?
I mean, it doesn't matter. We can run whatever they call. That's one good thing about our offensive line is you know, we're not one-dimensional offensive line. You know, every guy on the offensive line is a very athletic guy. We're very athletic guys who can move very well. We can run and get the field very well. So if we want to run outside zone, we can do that. If we want to run inside zone and beat up guys, we could do that. But I think lately, you know, with all the stuff coming together, you know, we're getting a better feel for each other. We're getting a better feel for each other, and stuff starting to flow better with the inside zone and outside zone stuff. I just feel like it's a great compliment to our team and to our backs that we can do both.
Wrapping it up with Donald Penn. Donald, take our listeners behind the scenes and tell us, what is it like to block for Marshawn when he's running violently? You open up a hole, he gets past you, and then you can hear the collision and him driving forward with two or three guys needing to take him down. What's that like?
Man, it's crazy, man. Sometimes you got to make sure you don't get caught up in watching them run. You know, you got to make sure you keep blocking. You know, sometimes you get caught up in, you know, sitting there and being a spectator because he is such a great back, and he drags so many people. You know, lately, you know, a lot of times, you know, you try to hurry up and get to the pile, you know, and try to get some guys off of him and try to get him up quick. But, you know, it's amazing to see. You know, I've seen it on TV, but seeing it, you know, up close and personal, hearing the hits and seeing how hard he runs and how strong he is and how much he fights for those extra yards, it's an impressive thing to see.
You mentioned beating yourself up. It looks like on TV or at the game, the fans are knowing that your quarterback has been hard on himself. With this two-game winning streak, have you noticed a change in Carr, that he's enjoying it more, smiling more, and ready to peak at the right time with these big games coming up?
I mean, Carr, I feel like he's even keel every game. I mean, I feel like he's the same guy all the time. I mean, that's our guy. That's our leader. I mean, he's kind of like me. You know, he's his hardest critic on himself. You know, he wish he got them two passes back that he had against the Giants, and we glad they didn't go their way. But DC's very hard on himself, and he's a great competitor. Like, I have a time long enough to say nothing to DC because he's already correcting himself before you even have to say anything to him. That's the kind of guy and player and competitor he is.
Donald, last question. I just talked to Howie Long about this rivalry with Kansas City. You know, everybody's a rival with the Raiders. You get that with the Chargers in Denver. A, what does this rivalry mean to you, and how important is it now to beat Kansas City on the road with all the Raider fans that'll be there and get in first place?
I mean, every game's hard. It doesn't matter who you're playing, where you're playing, or what. I mean, every game of this football and this NFL is hard. You know, no matter where you're playing or who you're playing, those guys get paid a lot of money just like us. You know, it's a rival game. You know, I know they're a little salty with the way the first game ended, so I know they're going to be coming out there with a chip on their shoulders, and we're about to come ready to combat that chip and ready to, you know, play our game and do our game. But this is a very important game. You know, we're tied for first, and it's a very important game. And, you know, like everybody knows, Kansas City's a very hard place to play. Kansas City's a very hard place to play, so we got a good game plan. We're going to be ready. It's going to be tough. We know it is, so we just got to go out there and out-toughen them and out-fight them.
Stay healthy. Keep playing well. Thanks a lot, Donald. Always appreciate your time.
All right, you too. Have a good one.
There he is, Donald Penn, joining us on the Official Raiders podcast, coming off the practice field, where I want to thank Will Kiss, who does an unbelievable job on the PR side and with the players and making players available for us, and Reggie McKenzie, who we've had on, and Jack Del Rio, and John Pagano, and the coaches that we've had in the past. I think Donald makes a good point about where this team is at now. You know, he wasn't going to bite on the rivalry being different than the other teams, but I thought that Donald against the Giants came back in hurt and played really well. A couple of people have told me that off the record. Something snapped with him in that game, and he does beat himself up. And I think the fact that he's a leader and he knows that this team is back in the hunt, I think you're going to see an excellent performance by this Raiders offensive line. They have an advantage in this game. Kansas City has been struggling. And when you look at the injuries that they've sustained and the fact that they've lost four in a row, I would just like to see the Raiders' offensive line dominate and have a game where they crush people. Where I know they can pass protect. That's up to Carr to keep the pocket alive and move and make plays. Well, when it comes to running, with Lynch running this hard, they get in the red zone, run it behind Donald Penn, run it behind Gabe Jackson, run it behind KO, Hudson, pound away, because the Raiders have an advantage when it comes to the battle in the trenches with Donald Penn and that offensive line. Hey, we wrap it up by going and staying back up in Alameda. Eddie Pascal joins us, the senior writer for the Silver and Black. And Eddie, it's a two-game winning streak for the Raiders. What has worked in your mind as you watch this team practice and see them prepare for Kansas City?
Well, two things that stand out to me. One, the defense is playing a lot better. You know, I'm not saying anything that nobody doesn't know already, but this group has been a group on a mission the past 2 weeks. 8 sacks in the past 2 weeks. Khalil Mack getting rolling. Bruce Irvin is getting hot at the right time. And not just those two, but Big Danico Achi, the man in the middle, he's also been disruptive. The other thing on the offense side of the football, Marshawn Lynch has gotten rocking. And, you know, head coach Jack Del Rio said, you know, there's been a little extra pep in beast mode, Seth, since he got back from that one-game suspension. And, you know, this Raiders offense is reaping those benefits. Marshawn's been running hard. Obviously, he went over 100 yards for the first time as a Raider last week. And I think those are the two things that really stand out. And, you know, down this final quarter of the season, I think those are the two things that are going to be critical in making sure that this team keeps stacking wins.
Yeah, I think that's critical, what you said, because what we've talked about this week on the podcast with Howie Long and Bucky Brooks and even Trent Green mentioned it is, you know, this is a game where Carr had such a monster game on the Thursday night victory, over 400 yards. You look at the success that he recently had, and Kansas City's been his nemesis. Now Marshawn's running the ball so well, and this offensive line, as we just talked to Donald Penn and their philosophy to be maulers, I'm sitting back wondering what's going to happen in this game. Do you attack downfield with Carr's arm? Or, as you're saying, beast mode is running downhill now violently. Stay with the star running back this time of year.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Sunday's game is one of the reasons why you got Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah.
Right? You wanted him for that cold weather game in December when you need, you know, that extra hard 5-6 yards. You know, you want to be able to look back and hand the ball off to number 24 and know that you're going to get that first down. You know, I think that being said, though, without Marcus Peters this week, you know, I fully anticipate that Todd Downing is going to give Derek a little room to work, let him take those deep shots, because we've seen time and again since Derek became the quarterback here that, you know, he's kind of at his most effective, he's at his most dynamic and explosive when he lets it rip. You know, he's one of the best just pure throwers in the game right now, and when he's able to do that, you know, it typically spells good things for the Silver and Black.
Senior writer for the Silver and Black, Eddie Pascal, joins us. All right, if Coop can't go, it's the return of Crabtree. Who else can step up? Because with these wins, especially against Denver and the Giants, other receivers knew that they'd have to make a play or two. Who do you sense can continue to be a go-to guy if Cooper can't go?
You know, I think, you know, Seth Roberts in the spot is always going to be a guy that's going to get his chances to make plays. You know, Derek Carr, you know, continually week in, week out, with Coop, without Coop, gives him chances to go and do his thing. The one guy that I'm really kind of keying on, though, this week in particular is going to be Cordarrelle Patterson. He's led the team in receiving the past 2 weeks. And, you know, I think the past, you know, 2 weeks especially, we've seen this guy's just a playmaker. You know, whether it's returning kicks, you know, being a gunner on special teams, obviously he's incredibly dynamic with the ball in his hands. But, you know, this is a guy that has, you know, when he gets rolling, when he's rocking and rolling, he's, you know, spreading the field. I mean, he can do some really, really exciting things. You know, I don't think there's many players in the NFL who are as exciting with a ball in their hands as Cordarrelle is. And so if Coop isn't able to go, and he wasn't able to practice on Wednesday, so we'll see what the rest of the week has in store. But if he's not able to go, I think pairing him out wide with Crabtree could spell big things for this Raiders offense.
Yeah, finally, Eddie, we take this podcast a week, you know, 1 week at a time. And I don't look ahead too far because you don't know what's going to happen. But you're there. You're with the team. Does it feel different? Everybody knows. It almost feels like an elimination game. It's the final quarter, the first game of the final quarter. I really think if the Raiders win, it ends Kansas City. If they lose 5 in a row, I don't see them getting off the mat. And the Raiders worked really hard to get back into this playoff hunt to be tied for first place. Is there added pressure around the team feeling how important this game is?
You know, I don't know if added pressure is the right term, but I think Coach has done a really good job, and Derek has kind of echoed, you know, what Coach has said, that, you know, we've been in playoff mode for a couple weeks here.
Yeah.
You know, sitting 2 games under 500, there was not a lot of room for error. And at this point, headed into the final, you know, quarter of the season, there's still very little room for error. Yeah, they're back at 500. Yes, they're tied for the lead in the division. But, you know, these 4 games are crucial. And I think that the team collectively knows that if they want to, you know, it's great that everything they want is still ahead of them, but they know that, hey, we got to take care of business. And if we have a slip up here or a slip up there, you know, we can't control our own destiny. And at this point, they can. And if they want to keep that up, they got to take care of business on Sunday.
Thank you, Eddie. Have a safe trip to Kansas City. I'll see you on the sidelines for Sunday night football against the Dallas Cowboys. That'll be a big one next week. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it, Rick.
There he is, Eddie Pascal, senior writer for the Silver and Black, as we wrap up this week's edition of the official Raiders podcast. I should call it Kansas City Week podcast. For the radio appearances I've been doing, for everybody in Kansas City, these fans are lunatics. This is all they want to do is beat the Raiders. And that's what San Diego kind of was like, and Denver similar. But, you know, I've been with the team for 19 years. Kansas City's different. They look at this. This game is circled when the schedule comes out. And Raider fans, this is a big one. And the Raiders got themselves back in this position. Hopefully a big win. And we got a lot of momentum to talk about heading into the Dallas game, which is a nationally televised game on Sunday Night Football. For everyone at Silver and Black Productions, I'm JT the Brick. Thanks for listening to the official Raiders podcast.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders.